Thanks for joining us today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, turning our attention to begin the show by talking with you about phenology with Stan Temple. Back with us once again, he's a professor emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison, studies how the change in seasons affect reproduction cycles for plants and animals. And as we talk with Stan, I hope you will join in. Give us a call. What about the cycles in nature around you? Have you paid attention to the birds or other wildlife to track their behavior over the course of a year? Have you heard of phenology before? You can join in with your questions or comments. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Stan Temple, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Yeah, it's good, Larry. And I suppose your regular listeners certainly know about phenology. We've been doing this annual show for over 10 years.
It's been great. And every year I look forward to the latest Wisconsin phenology calendar. What are some of the phenological events that happen, maybe that are happening right now here in our state?
Yeah, most people, when they think of phenology, they often focus on the sort of welcome events of spring. Migratory birds are arriving, plants are blooming, and somehow fall becomes the sort of month in which things are disappearing, and people aren't quite as enthusiastic, perhaps, about monitoring what's going on. But there are some really interesting things happening during fall, during the months of September, October, and November, meteorological fall. If you're into plants, one of the last blooming plants in Wisconsin is blooming right now. If you're lucky enough to have a witch hazel shrub in your neighborhood, you've probably seen the bright, very unusual yellow flowers. It is one of the very last flowers to bloom in Wisconsin. And, of course, it's pretty hard to ignore the falling of leaves, but it's perhaps even more difficult to ignore the falling of acorns if you have an oak tree in your neighborhood, or, as I do, have an oak tree overarching your house. Those acorns sound like a major hailstorm coming down. But there's an interesting thing happening. White oaks and red oaks and black oaks are all dropping their acorns, but something very different happens after those acorns have fallen. White oak acorns germinate right away. So they're germinating in the fall, whereas black oaks and red oaks don't germinate till the following spring. That was always kind of a puzzle. And I think people have finally thought that it probably has something to do with passenger pigeons.
Oh.
When passenger pigeons were around, they're extinct now, but when they were around, they were incredibly efficient predators on acorns. And by having their acorns germinate quickly, almost as soon as they drop, white oaks have sort of protected their acorns against being gobbled up by passenger pigeons. But in any event, you know, it's something that often gets overlooked. If you're into insects, you know, during the fall is when the insect world goes silent. They reach that critical temperature when the average temperature drops into the 50s, when their metabolism no longer accommodates activity, like crickets perhaps being the most notable, and they stop making sound. So suddenly the insect world goes silent. There's all kinds of folklore about things in the fall, the woolly bear caterpillar. That one just is bizarre, that people somewhere along the line got the idea that the width of the brown bands on these caterpillars, they're rather endearing little caterpillars.
Yeah, and they are.
And they're very active during fall as they're trying to find a place to spend the winter. But the width of the stripe has absolutely nothing to do with the severity of winter. It has to do with how many molts the caterpillar has gone through in its life. And the width gets wider and wider each time. Birds, of course, most of our migratory birds have left, but a whole host of migratory birds are arriving to spend the winter with us, and it all happens during this three-month period. So most people, even in town, are aware that, you know, the juncos arrived and the white-throated sparrows, and if you're lucky, this year in particular, there are a lot of really impressive northern finches, like evening grosbeaks, that are showing up in Wisconsin to spend the winter with us, where most of our breeding birds have headed to the tropics or to warmer climes. Mammals, of course, are entering hibernation.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are sort of dropping out of the picture. You've probably seen squirrels and chipmunks going crazy collecting nuts during the fall. And for the chipmunks, they're going to hibernate. They're going to go dormant. But they've been stashing all those nuts away because they wake up during the winter and take advantage of their little larder of nuts to feed on, to keep them going over the long winter. So a lot going on.
A lot going on, and a lot of that kind of appears in the phenology calendar, which I love, by the way. I love that calendar. I have it right behind on the wall right behind my chair and set low so that I can just turn around and take a look at what's going on for a particular day.
Yeah, it's become a very popular calendar in Wisconsin. It gives you an opportunity to anticipate when almost 200 different natural events are going to happen during the year. And it's also an educational calendar in that every year I pick a theme for the calendar and write an essay that introduces the calendar to talk about whatever the theme might be. The theme for this year, for 2025, was focused on how plants and animals stay within their temperature comfort range, their thermal niche. Next year, for 2026, the theme is a reflection back on Nina Leopold Bradley's contributions to phenology and to the phenology calendar. But then, as you know, every month there's also a little sidebar to the calendar,
which I love,
that talks about some event that's happening during the year and in that month and explores it in a little more depth.
It's and don't forget the photography.
Yeah, the amazing what the nature photographers of Wisconsin are able to come up with. I don't think we've ever had a request that we've sent out for an image that hasn't just had a deluge of offerings from nature photographers. And sometimes we come up with some pretty specific, pretty odd images that we're looking for, and it appears that nothing is sacred anymore. These photographers have captured just about every possible event in nature.
They're always a pleasant surprise, and I enjoy turning that over every month and seeing what the next picture holds. You mentioned Nina Leopold Bradley, and of course Aldo Leopold. We talk a lot about Aldo, but we don't spend as much time as we should be probably on Nina Leopold Bradley.
Yeah, I think that's right, and why we're sort of celebrating her contributions with the 2026 calendar. Nina was the middle child of Aldo and Estella Leopold. She was born in New Mexico when the family was there, Aldo working in the Forest Service, but she grew up. A lot of her maturation was here in Wisconsin. And like all of her siblings, Nina was exposed to a father who was a great naturalist and encouraged all of his children to be in touch with nature. And one of the ways that he did that was through keeping phenological records. And we know that the five siblings, once Aldo Leopold became a professor at the university and acquired the shack property up in on the banks of the Wisconsin River near Baraboo, that the family went up there on weekends, and one of the many sort of outdoor activities that they participated in was keeping phenological records. And the kids really competed with one another to see who could find the first blooming of a pasque flower or the first arrival of a bluebird or whatever the event might be. And Aldo became something of a folk hero in the field of phenology because his records from the 30s and 40s, he died in 1948, they are a marker for how the lives of plants and animals have subsequently responded to climate change. And we can monitor how different things are today than they were back in Aldo's time. Well, Nina, sort of remembering perhaps the joy of keeping phenological records with her family, when she moved back to Wisconsin in 1976, she built her retirement home just down the road from the family shack and resumed keeping phenological records. And like her father, she was a curious naturalist, and after a time noted that the dates on which she was recording some of these events had shifted dramatically to much earlier times. And eventually, her observations led her to want to share that information with the scientific world that during the 1970s was just starting to really come to grips with climate change science. And Nina figured that, well, her phenological records were clearly a good indicator of how plants and animals have been shifting, adapting to climate change. And she published in 1999 a really important paper, one of the very first papers that used historical phenological records, in her case from her father, to document how plants and animals were responding. So Nina, 1976, she started keeping these records. She kept those records literally almost till the day she died in 2011 at age 93. It was just part of her daily routine. And it is that way for many people, that once you become tuned in to everything that's happening in the natural world around you, you almost subconsciously end up keeping track of things and anticipating when favorite events are going to happen during the year. So Nina was a remarkable person, and we sort of celebrate her in the calendar this year, and particularly looking at her data from 1976 to 2011, which for anyone who's paid attention to what's happening with the climate, it was during the 1970s that climate change really accelerated. It had been increasing gradually through the early 20th century, but by the 1970s, it took off. People will remember the famous or infamous hockey stick graph that showed this tremendous acceleration. And Nina was right there at the right time and in the right place, that she was able to compare her records with her father's records from the same place. And for not just for cultivated plants or domestic animals, but for hundreds of natural native species of plants and animals. So it's really a treasure trove and a credit to her that she kept this going.
Stan Temple, our guest today, senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation and emeritus professor in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology, talking with him about phenology and the phenology calendar that's coming out for 2026. Questions for him, I hope you'll join in. Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks for joining us today on WPR News. At 11:45 today, we'll talk with the author of a new field guide, Birds of the Great Lakes. And at 12:30, we'll talk about the birds at Horicon Marsh and how you can get involved maybe with a birdwatching group there. Right now, Stan Temple with us talking phenology and the phenology calendar for 2026 from the Aldo Leopold Foundation, something that he puts together. Kind of a labor of love, I think we could say.
It is, Larry. And, you know, when I joined the faculty here in 1976, the same year that Nina returned to Wisconsin, she was one of the first non-academic individuals that I met. And it didn't take us long to realize that we were both sort of passionate about keeping phenological records. So over the years, you know, our shared interest in phenology, mine primarily in birds and animals, kept a lively conversation going between us.
Mia in Beaver Dam has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mia.
Hi. My question is, if you've never really practiced phenology before, how can you get started in an easy way, either just in your backyard or around your town?
Well, it's easy today because there are several organizations, citizen science organizations, that actually recruit people to participate in their programs. So now, if you're interested in observing events in your neighborhood, you are invited to share your observations. The big one is eBird. For bird watchers sharing their observations of birds. If you're into plants, there's the National Phenology Network. And both of them have these easy apps that allow you to upload your observations directly from your smartphone or computer. So you don't even need to remember things. You can almost do it instantly. Just when you see something, upload it. The value of that, of course, is that now with climate change, phenological records have become increasingly important, and scientists rely on the volume of data that now comes from citizen scientists to help them understand the patterns. And both eBird and the National Phenology Network, as well as, of course, our phenology calendar from the Aldo Leopold Foundation, are great resources to help you sort of get into the practice of keeping records.
Yeah, and explain what that calendar is all. I mean, we've talked about some of it, but, you know, somebody like me, I could make good use, I think, of the calendar.
Yeah, the main thing for people like Mia would be that looking at the calendar, day by day, we sort of alert you to what you should be aware of in the natural world that might be happening shortly after the date at which we've announced it. We have to update the calendar regularly because things are happening earlier and earlier each year, but it gives you a way of anticipating when things are going to happen. And, of course, maybe pique your curiosity to actually try to find some of the things that maybe you weren't aware of in the neighborhood that might be happening.
We should, and how can Mia or anybody else get a copy of the calendar?
Yeah, the very popular phenology calendar now. It's really grown in popularity, but it's available from the Aldo Leopold Foundation. You can simply go to aldoleopold.org and order it from the bookstore. It's $18.95, which covers the postage. Great gift for Christmas, but it's a very popular calendar, and the popularity seems to grow every year as more and more people discover it and how much fun it is to actually keep track of things.
Mia, does that help?
Yeah, definitely, and I'm really excited to purchase my calendar. I usually get one every year, so thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. Question or comment, give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. You know, I looked this morning at my own calendar, and on the sidebar you had a note that for the month of November, that this year's calendar from 1976 to 2023, the average temperature at the shack, at Leopold Shack, increased by 1 degree per decade. So by 2050, the climate of Sauk County, where the shack is, might be found as far north as Marathon County, And that's about 130 miles north of Sauk County.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable when you sort of explain how climate change is affecting things, that plants and animals are shifting their geographic distribution to further and further cooler northern or higher elevations. So if you're, for example, in the western states, you've seen things sort of going up the side of the mountain as they progressively try to seek out cooler and cooler places. Here in Wisconsin, it's basically a movement northward. And for some organisms, you know, moving 130 miles is no sweat. If you're a bird, even a mammal, moving that distance, you know, is pretty easy. But if you're a small amphibian or reptile or certainly a plant, moving 130 miles, even in 25 years, is kind of a big challenge. And it means that many plants and animals just aren't going to be able to keep pace and continue to find places where the temperature is ideal for them. When, as the calendar last year, this year said, when they're in their thermal niche, when they're comfortable. We all know what that is for our house because we have a thermostat, but, you know, plants and animals have to make their own adjustments.
You know, and I'm thinking about the use of the calendar, how you use the calendar depending on where you're located. And if you're far north, you can still use this calendar, even though it's kind of based on what happens at the shack.
Yeah, and you know, it's fortunate that there is a sort of a rule of thumb that lets you do a rough calculation. A fellow named Andrew Hopkins was an entomologist who worked in a college of agriculture and came up with a rough equation that allows you to predict how phenology is going to change with latitude and longitude. And in the calendar, we give you that little equation that might let you adapt what we're showing you on the calendar, which is based on South Central Wisconsin, to other places. It's a rule of thumb. It's not 100% accurate, but it gives you an idea of how many days, or in some cases even weeks, things might be earlier or later than they are in South Central Wisconsin.
And once you figure it out, it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
You can do the math pretty darn quick.
Yep. Yep.
After that. After you read how to do that.
You know, it's amazing. You know, that's one little rule having to do with phenology. And there are others as well that people may or may not be aware of. I mentioned earlier that during fall is when insect sounds stop. And some people may be aware that there is a bit of, we'll call it scientific folklore, that if you listen to crickets chirping, if you count the number of chirps in 15 seconds and add 40, it is approximately the temperature outside.
Now, how accurate is that?
That is pretty accurate. That's a lot better than woolly bear caterpillars or groundhogs in reflecting what's actually happening out there. But if you do the math, you realize that by October and November, our average temperature is getting low enough that that equation goes to zero and doesn't really work anymore.
Somebody called and wonders if you could give the phone number for those who want to order a calendar but maybe are not on the internet. So,
yeah, I can. I don't have it memorized, but I will look quickly here. And, you're welcome to call, and they will take your order as well as you can do it, of course, most easily online, but the Alta Leopold Foundation number is 608-355-0279.
So let me make sure I've got this right. 608-355-0279.
Correct. And they will be happy to take your order.
Okay. There you go. Well, the month of December, of course, that's coming up not too darn long from now. There's a couple of things. maybe we talk about what's going to happen in the coming months of December, but also this, it's the anniversary month of two important acts, the Clean Air Act and the Endangered Species Act.
Yep.
Those acts had a huge effect on the field of conservation.
No, absolutely. They are all a reflection of the things that were happening during what is often nicknamed the environmental decade from the 1960s into the 1970s. Almost all of our sort of bedrock environmental and conservation legislation and policy was established. And for those who keep track of things, environmentalists and conservationists had better not get too complacent about some of these things, because they are very much under threat today. The Endangered Species Act is an endangered piece of legislation in many ways. It was a remarkable period of time for a totally nonpartisan consensus that we needed to take care of our environment. And tragically, over the decades, you know, the environment and conservation has become a divisive issue rather than a consensus.
Yeah. So what about the month of December? What's going on in the month of December?
Well, in terms of things that change, it used to be that sandhill cranes headed south in December. And now... The big congregation of sandhill cranes on the Wisconsin River, right behind Aldo Leopold's shack, they're sticking around well into January. And we've got a little bit of a in-house betting going on about whether this will be the winter when the cranes simply don't leave and stay in Wisconsin all year round, because winters are becoming milder and, of course, coming later and ending sooner. Next weekend, we're celebrating the Sandhill Cranes with the Great Midwest Crane Fest. So on the coming weekend, the International Crane Foundation and the Aldo Leopold Foundation will be hosting what, given that the weather is going to be remarkably warm after the cold snap we've just had, we're anticipating thousands of people are going to descend on the Leopold Foundation and the International Crane Foundation to celebrate the recovery of sandhill cranes and witness the large numbers of birds that are congregating there.
So people will be, what all is going to happen at that? Well, I mean, we've talked about it, but it's been a few weeks since I visited about it.
Yeah, well, it's 2 days at both foundations that are just a couple of miles apart. Have nonstop activities. There are lectures going on, there are exhibits, there are tours going on. I'm giving a bunch of talks at the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And of course, the highlight of the weekend is getting to see the cranes. So for those who were fortunate enough to put in their reservation early, they can go out to the river with me and enjoy the spectacle of thousands of cranes staging for their migration.
Yeah, it's an amazing amazing weekend coming up, and the weather's going to be pretty decent, I think, for the most part. Certainly on Saturday.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, in January, a couple of birds like northern cardinals and black-capped chickadees begin their songs.
Yeah, this it's during the changing seasons. You know, the two things that most people are aware of in the physical environment is day length changes, that it gets shorter after the summer solstice, and then, you know, gets longer in the spring. They'll also note that accompanying that is a change in temperature. And day length and temperature are two of the principal drivers of phenology, of when these events are happening. Plants and animals cue into temperature and day length to sort of trigger these seasonal events. And in January, days are getting longer, slightly, but it's enough to trigger the behavior of some of our resident birds, like chickadees and northern cardinals. So they get psychologically primed to start doing territorial behavior to have a nesting territory later in the spring. But that urge is suppressed by temperature. So if it's cold out, nobody's going to sing. But if you have a warm, sunny day, which, you know, Wisconsinites always look forward to the January thaw, these birds will suddenly burst into territorial song because the temperature allowed that behavior to be released. And now, of course, you know, we list that the chickadees begin their territorial song on January 1st. I mean, they've been moving, you know, they're weeks ahead of when Aldo would have recorded this. And, you know, it's like, well, it's maybe no longer going to be an event for January. It may end up being an event for December.
It's amazing to me that the change has gotten, and that's I guess the fun about having a calendar, or getting yourself more attuned to the to those events.
And honestly, I mean, there's a subversive reason for promoting phenology and having the phenology calendar, and that was something that Aldo Leopold was well aware of, that getting people hooked on monitoring and tracking seasonal events is a great way to get them in touch with the environment around them, to get, it's often termed, a sense of place, to know what's happening, you know, in the natural world around you. And when he was a professor at the University of Wisconsin, Aldo Leopold actually required his graduate students to keep phenological records. And he did that very openly, saying, you know, if I don't let you or make you do this, you're going to pay attention to the animal that you're studying or the immediate things that are happening on your study area, and you'll lose touch with the bigger ecosystem around you. So, you know, subversively, we're thinking that this phenology calendar is a good way to let people get a sense of place and sort of get in touch with the natural world around them.
I was thinking about bears.
Mm.
Bears, you know, you might think they're sleeping during the winter months, but on January 5th, I think, black bear sows give birth to cubs in their dens, or that's when it starts.
Yeah. Yeah, we often think of, you know, birthing of young animals happening later in the spring. But, yeah, for bears, it happens pretty much in the dead of winter. And, of course, those young cubs stay with their mother in the den and don't emerge until much later in the spring. And bears, you know, we often think of bears as hibernating, and you know they're not going into a deep sleep that's going to last all winter the way, say, a woodchuck, a groundhog might. Obviously, if they're giving birth and, you know, taking care of the cubs in the den, you know, they are dormant, certainly, but still active metabolically.
And those dens are really interesting to me because they can be just not really what you might think of as a den.
Yeah, often it doesn't look like, you know, a place where we might want to hole up during the winter, but it gives them enough shelter, and the shelter is important, to have something over your head, which anybody who does winter camping knows how important that is, so that you're not radiating a lot of heat to the sky. But yeah, when you think about, you know, when things sort of start waking up, there are a lot of other animals that start their territorial behavior or start their mating behavior very early in the year. And probably the one that many people will hear about are great horned owls.
Yeah.
Who are setting up their territories very early. In fact, they're already starting to be very active and hooting at night. There's something going on now in the fall that generally is called the fall shuffle. It's when young birds that were raised the previous summer are moving around the landscape trying to find a place that they can settle, and in the process trespassing on other territories, and they get the boot. And at least if you're an owl, the way you give the boot is to hoot loudly and, you know, drive these young animals out of your territory. But yeah, owls are already starting their mating season.
And there's a reason for the, you know, kicking them out. I mean, they need to go to new territory.
Sure, sure. And the parents need to get busy getting ready for the next brood.
Well, you know what? We've been talking about a whole range of things here, and it just reminds me again that part of the fun of having this phenology calendar is you start thinking about those kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just plain fun once you get hooked. And as I said, you know, we're celebrating Nina Leopold Bradley in next year's calendar. And for Nina, throughout her life, you know, keeping phenological records was just plain fun. As her father described it, it was the pleasure of the search. But once you get past that introduction where it's fun to do, then, you know, if you're curious, you start to ask questions. And as Nina did, try to find, as her father described it, find order and meaning in what you've observed. So it's a process, and we hope more people will be encouraged to do that by buying the calendar.
And how do we get the calendar?
You can order it from the Aldo Leopold Foundation at aldoleopold.org. Pretty simple. And order it from the bookstore, 1895, which includes postage.
And I wrote that phone number down, too. If you do not have access to, or if you just want to call, you can call it 608-355-0279. 608-355-0279. Stan, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
Look forward to it next year.
We'll look forward to having you back. Stan Temple, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison, a senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation, and he's the guy that kind of comes up with the new calendar every year, and it's one you're going to really enjoy. I think you'll also enjoy hearing about a new book. It's called Birds of the Great Lakes, and we'll talk with the author next. I'm Larry Mehler for WPR News.